It's an unfortunate day, and it's a painful day. But inside of all of that, it's a day when we will finally reveal why for 10 months I have gone through this. And I look forward to defending myself and defending the people of this city as I've done throughout my entire professional career.
So the mayor of New York City indicted today. That's his response to this indictment that was read and unsealed a little bit earlier. And it's important for people to understand that he's in a bit of trouble here. I think a lot of people are questioning as to the connection to Mayor Adams's unwillingness to go along with the illegal immigration efforts, I would say, of the Biden administration. Mayor Adams pushed back on it. And you could go back and check the tapes when he was doing that. I was saying if they were going to look to replace Joe Biden for president in this election, that Mayor Adams might very well be a viable candidate to do that, because he was kind of representing the American people the way the American people needed to be represented right now, which is to be advocated for over, yes, even those people who are flooding across our open borders under Kamala Harris's border czar, the border czar experience that we have seen her completely, completely mishandle. Here is the U.S. attorney, Damian Williams, on the indictment of Mayor Adams.
As the indictment alleges, Mayor Adams engaged in a long-running conspiracy in which he solicited and knowingly accepted illegal campaign contributions from foreign donors and corporations. As we allege, Mayor Adams took these contributions even though he knew they were illegal. And even though he knew these contributions were attempts by a Turkish government official and Turkish businessmen to buy influence with him. We also allege that the mayor sought and accepted well over $100,000 in luxury travel benefits from some of the same foreign actors who arranged many of the illegal campaign contributions. These benefits included free international business class flights and opulent hotel rooms in foreign cities.
So the United States attorney there is talking about basically the mayor of New York City has been taking favors mostly connected to Turkey. And my understanding of the reporting so far is this is one of possibly four different accusations, allegations that are going to be levied towards the mayor. Very interesting. And in the wake of all of this, the obvious question is, if Mayor Adams is to be removed, which can only happen by way of the governor of New York. So, you know, Governor Kathy Hochul there is the one who can make that decision. There's like a deputy mayor. That's not the person who actually fills in for that mayor should they not be able to serve. There's a position called a public advocate. That's the person who would step in.
This is pretty scary. So Jermaine Williams is a far left radical, ally of AOC, was arrested at a pro-illegal immigration protest, ran for lieutenant governor against Kathy Hochul, and while he was campaigning said, "I was first elected to publicly support Occupy Wall Street." He said, "I believe most Democrats believe in democratic socialism. I am a democratic socialist. I am a democratic socialist, and the tenets of it are what most people want." And then also said, "We have Trump in the White House because bigots and Nazis espouse their convictions, and the Democratic Party didn't have the courage to do the same." So he is outside the, he considers MAGA Republicans, bigots and Nazis. And he thinks the Democratic Party is too far to the right.
And just to explain everybody why he would be in the pecking order, because he is not the deputy mayor.
Yeah.
He is the public advocate. So we're
succeeded
talking
Letitia James in that job.
So there you have Mark Thiessen explaining the succession should Mayor Adams be removed by the governor of New York. I don't know what's going to happen next. I don't know how dirty Mayor Adams is. I'm going to be honest, though, that when they started listing off the things that they were charging him with, I was expecting something more than what they actually levied against him. And there is a part of me that just assumes that the right people in the right places, and by right, I don't mean anything right about it, are getting away with this type of stuff all the time. So I'll be, I mean, if this is justice, if this is no one is above the law and this is the new way forward for the American Justice Department, interesting to start at Mayor New York Adam or Mayor Adams position there in New York City. But if no one's above the law, no one's above the law. Interesting to see the crime that they are willing to prosecute in New York City. And if he's corrupt, then let's have it. If he's not, he's going to fight it. And it'll be a very interesting story leading into the next 40 days of this election. The biggest story that most people are paying attention to right now is the hearing that's taking place on the assassination attempts of Donald Trump's life. Fox News reports a Pennsylvania police officer on Thursday, that's today, told lawmakers that a local operator's bullet ultimately stopped failed assassination attempt shooter Thomas Crooks before the United States Secret Service fatally shot him. Huh. Adams Township Police Department. The sergeant there's testimony came Thursday morning today during a hearing before the House Trump Assassination Attempt Task Force, which has been tasked with investigating the July 13th shooting of former President Donald Trump, the first of two recent attempts against him. I'll just go ahead and read the quote here. Across the two counter-assault teams, the quick reaction force, three sniper teams, and support personnel, we provided total manpower of 44 persons, exceeding the number requested by the Secret Service. This is a commander with the Butler County Emergency Services Unit, he said in his opening remarks. Quote, at no point during the planning process was Butler County ESU asked to secure the AGR complex. At no point. Nor the perimeter surrounding that area. At no point during the planning process was Butler ESU asked to deploy a sniper team to the roof of the AGR complex. There is so much miscommunication that has taken place over the course of specifically the Butler incident, which we unfortunately have had to investigate yet a second assassination attempt on Donald Trump's life in the midst of still trying to get details on the first. But we have to very much so pay attention to who was told what, and were there holes that are just is this just incompetence? Is this just are we so negligent at the United States Secret Service level that this is what this looks like? More from Fox News. Butler County snipers inside the AGR building could not see the shooter from the roof of the AGR complex, nor was that part of their duties for the day. Lenz added, a member of the quick response force, however, noticed several suspicious people in the area, one of whom turned out to be the shooter. A Beaver County sniper took a photo of the suspicious male near the AGR building and a photo of the shooter using a rangefinder pointing toward the stage, who was later identified as Crooks. This is very consequential, first and foremost, on the life of Donald Trump. And in the midst of all of the conversation about Butler County, and I mean, boy, when you hear the lefties come out and they want to insult just the teeny tiny wound that Donald Trump had on his ear. I mean, if you want to see hatred in action, if you want to see hatred walking and talking, look at people who make those comments about Donald Trump's injury when a bullet grazed his head. They'll even be like, it wasn't his head, it was his ear. I mean, that's the manifestation of what hate looks like, embodied in people who despise this man in many ways. I think they don't even understand why they hate him. They just know that they're supposed to. These people are so disgusted with him that they excuse an attempt on this man's life. But in the midst of all of this, in the midst of everything that we discuss, we have to remember that there was a man who did lose his life that day. That there was a death that day by a stray bullet that was meant for Donald Trump. That's what's at stake here. Every time people talk about a close call in Butler County, it wasn't a close call for somebody else who just showed up because they support Donald Trump. And yes, the rhetoric of constantly talking about how dangerous Donald Trump is instills the crazies out there to do crazy things. And people have died because of it. And it's unacceptable. In turn, it's affecting the future of this campaign and this election season.
In fact, we have a new whistleblower report tonight, Jesse. Whistleblower with direct knowledge of the Trump campaign and the Secret Service and their interactions tell us that the Secret Service recently told the Trump campaign they could not secure a rally for Donald Trump in the state of Wisconsin. Now, this is interesting because it directly contradicts what the Secret Service Director Roe said last week when he said, oh, Trump is getting exactly the same level of protection as Kamala Harris and the sitting president. Really? Because Kamala Harris just held a rally in Madison, Wisconsin, and I am told by a whistleblower with direct knowledge of the situation that Secret Service says that Trump should not and could not have a rally in Wisconsin because Secret Service could not protect him and adequately staff it. This calls into question, Jesse, what they're saying about staffing. It calls into question what they're saying about parity between Harris and Trump. And once again, it underscores the fact they're not telling us the whole truth.
There's your Senator Josh Hawley reacting to this whistleblower. He seems to have had quite a few conversations with them. The push against Donald Trump, the attempt to try to keep him standing still, to keep him hidden, to the extent that his life is being threatened, it should scare every American. We know that there are people in the world who want Donald Trump dead, and they're foreign adversaries. Iran has said as much. Iran has wanted him dead for some time. Iran would curse the day that Donald Trump is elected back into office. And there's one way that Iran can handle this problem before Election Day. And Donald Trump's life is worthy of ultimate protection. Doesn't it speak to the American people how much Iran, who is behind all of the funding of the discord in the Middle East right now, without the money coming through Iran, the Middle East is not capable of being this violent right now. Israel is a safer place. Why is it that Iran is so invested, literally invested, in a Kamala Harris presidency?
The Iranians are hacked into President Trump's campaign account, his legal team's account, sharing the information with the American media to undermine our election. We've done nothing about it. At the end of the day, we know they're trying to assassinate President Trump, Pompeo, Brian Hook, Robert O'Brien, and we're doing nothing about it. What are the consequences to a foreign government interfering in our election when it comes to Donald Trump? Nothing. That's unacceptable. So what did the UN General Assembly do with the largest state sponsor of terrorism, a man who's trying, a country trying to kill President Trump, hacking into his campaign? They invited an Iranian representative to speak to the UN General Assembly today. You can't make it up. Biden spoke to the UN General Assembly and talked about the winds of change. The winds of change are a fire created by Joe Biden. This is unacceptable to the Biden administration. You owe it to the American people to punish Iran for trying to undermine our election.
Another senator, Lindsey Graham, looking to punish Iran. I know what people are going to say about that, but having Iran in check, having Iran understand their place in the world where they don't get to run roughshod over the entire Middle East to fund terror across the Middle East, and knowing that there are people in our country right now that wish us ill because our borders have been left open by Biden and Kamala Harris. We have a lot of problems on our hands. We talk about the economy. It's a huge deal. It's probably the biggest deal. But knowing what is taking place in the world and how it has gotten its way into our country, how the people who want to represent us, who want to earn our votes, are not safe, and the massive, epic failure by the United States Secret Service to secure Donald Trump as their protectee, with Keystone Cop behavior out there, the massive failure has everybody asking questions. And the more that they stonewall and refuse to provide detailed answers, the more people fill in the blanks, which is why truth always matters, why journalism is important, and why the death of journalism will be the death of this country. Because the pursuit of truth has to be above all other things. The American people have to know what the truth is so that they can act accordingly when they choose and fire their representatives. What is going on at the United States Secret Service? I think it's a huge question that many of us would like to know the answer to. The YouTube live chat poll for today is, which candidate would be a greater liability for the Democrats? We're 40 days out from the election right now. Joe Biden or Kamala Harris? Do you think that the Democrats would be doing better right now if they had Joe Biden in? Or was Kamala Harris the right move for the Democratic Party? I think you can look at a lot of polls and see where Kamala Harris is right now. The question is, of course, as always, do you believe them? Go to the Annie Frye YouTube channel. Come say hi in the YouTube live chat and vote. The poll is located right there. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. So Fox News is reporting that the feds have seized Eric Adams' phone after the New York City mayor's indictments. There's a lot going on in New York City, and we go to our legal expert to get to the bottom of it. Hans von Spakovsky joins us once again, senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation and former FEC commissioner and DOJ lawyer. Hans, what a day. This time, a legal case in New York City that isn't about Donald Trump. Good to have you back.
Yeah, isn't that something? Yeah, I just finished reading the indictment, over 50 pages against Adams. And let me tell you, these are very serious charges. Five criminal counts, and it charges everything from bribery to wire fraud to his solicitation and acceptance of campaign contributions from foreign nationals. And if you go through it, what you find is that, in particular, a Turkish government official, he's referred to as a senior official in the Turkish diplomatic corps, started doing things like arranging free travel on the Turkish airline. And the free travel was such that he, Adams, and his companions, as they're referred to, they didn't just go to Turkey. They went to France, China, Sri Lanka, India, Hungary, and Turkey. Not only that, but they arranged free or heavily discounted hotel rooms in luxury hotels, great meals in high-end restaurants, et cetera. The indictment, I've never actually seen this before, Andy, the indictment has photos of both, for example, the bedroom and the bathroom of the St. Regis Hotel in Istanbul, which they arranged for Adams to use for less than $100. You know how much that suite normally costs per day?
More than
$7,000. $7,000.
It's the deal of the century. Hans von Spakovsky with us right now. You know, I'm just going to be honest. In what we have seen with a lot of politicians who end up getting confronted with the law, it's usually pretty salacious. It's usually pretty dramatic. And this looks like corruption to its core. But, you know, I think that I errantly have an assumption that there's just some of this going on with all high level politicos that are out there. And if you're with among the right people, you tend to get away with it. There are people who are suggesting that Mayor Adams ticked off the Biden administration with his immigration stance. How long do we know that these investigations, if you know the answer to this question, have been going on? Is there a long timeline to this?
Yeah, there is. And I don't think this has anything to do with him ticking them off about immigration. This started in 2014 when he became the Brooklyn Borough president, where he sought and accepted luxury international travel. And look, part of it is not just that he was getting money from foreign sources, but listen, the indictment is filled with email intercepts of emails, text messages indicating that Adams himself was directly involved in trying to hide all of this so that no one would find out about it. And the folks who were paying him illegally, giving him contributions, so forth, they weren't doing it just because they liked him. They were doing it because they wanted to get something in exchange. And one of the examples they give is that the Turkish official went to Adams and said, hey, we're opening up our new Turkish consular building, and we want it to be open in time for the Turkey president's visit. And we want you to talk to the New York Fire Department and tell them to forego doing a fire inspection so the building will be open. If, in fact, a fire inspection had been done, the building would have failed and it would not have been open. And Adams did exactly what the Turks wanted him to do, and the fire official who was responsible for inspecting the building was told he would lose his job if he did not agree to do this and the building was opened.
Isn't that funny how that works? We're speaking with Hans von Spakovsky right now. I mean, it seems like classic corruption and, you know, a high-level official using their position to jockey for their own personal gain. Do you see this being a long, drawn-out process? Are we in the first inning of a very, very long game here?
I think we're in the first inning of a long game, but I think one of the reasons for that is this trial is going to take quite a while if Adams doesn't agree, you know, to plead guilty with some kind of deal. Because, look, the indictment itself, like I said, it's over 50 pages.
Yeah.
And this went on for many years, and so there is going to be a lot of evidence produced by the government in this case. By the way, if folks are wondering, well, this is a mayor, you know, how does the federal government, for example, have any jurisdiction over campaign contributions going to a local campaign? Well, it's because there is a federal law that prohibits foreign nationals, foreign governments, from spending, contributing, donating money, not just in federal elections, but also state and local elections. So when Adams, as alleged, was soliciting foreign contributions, he was violating federal law.
Well, we're going to watch it closely and hope that justice is served there in New York. There's a couple of things that I want to talk to you about, so we're going to shift gears here. Donald Trump's legal team is in New York right now making an argument on that massive, what was it, like $400 million payout or whatever that's gaining interest each and every day. Can you just give us a summary of what's taking place with the Trump legal team today in New York City?
Well, they are they are appealing the decision by Judge Merchan that where he decided that, in fact, Donald Trump and his company had defrauded companies and banks who had lent him money, despite the fact that none of the banks complained, none of the individuals who lend money complained. In fact, all of them had their loans paid back with interest. There were so many problems with what the judge did in that case, not only his unethical conduct and even remaining in the case, but his constant rulings in the case against Trump and in favor of the attorney general, that did not allow Trump to get in basic evidence that would show that he was innocent of these charges. And those are all the claims being argued today before the New York Court of Appeals, and trying to convince them that they should overturn this verdict.
Well, we'll be watching that one closely as well. I wanted to shift gears a little bit. Since we have you and you work with the Heritage Foundation, Project 2025 could never have paid for the type of publicity that it has gotten in this election cycle because of the Democrats. The Democrats have seized on it. I think anytime you can come up with a one word or two word name for a boogeyman in politics, if you can make it stick, that's a very valuable thing. They've taken Project 2025. Right. They've assessed it as Donald Trump's blueprint for what he's going to do in his presidency. Donald Trump has really pushed it away at arm's length and says he hasn't even read it yet. But the Democrats have not missed an opportunity to try to put a tent on that circus and push it and sell tickets as much as they possibly can.
Well, that's true. But actually, I got to tell you, two things have happened. One, it has caused a lot of people, I think, to actually go to the Project 2025 website and read our policy proposals. And the response we're hearing is extremely positive. People read it and think, wait a minute. This is common sense. This is the way the government ought to be run. And the other thing that has happened is, look, the mainstream, the left-stream media, as Rush used to call it, as you know, they are very much in favor of Kamala Harris. They're almost running a campaign for her. But even those media sources, from CNN on, you know, all of them these days do supposed fact checks. And if you go to the website, you'll find all these fact checks, even by liberal organizations like CNN, admitting that the claims being made by Kamala Harris about Project 2025 are false.
Yeah, I mean, it always requires people to do a little extra research or a little educating of their own, as opposed to listening to either side of the echo chambers that exist in politics. Say everything here is good and everything here is bad, but I mean, it's not really. It shouldn't come as a shock to people who are paying attention to politics that those people super engaged on the far left would be appalled by Project 2025, because it's limited government, it's conservative constitutional government, and naturally those people are disgusted by that.
Yeah, they don't like the idea that the power of the bureaucracies within all these executive departments would be reduced, would be limited, and would the total intent is to prevent them from going outside the bounds of what they're supposed to be doing and interfering in the everyday lives and professions of Americans.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of work needs to be done here. But, you know, I really wonder how rapidly Donald Trump is going to pick up Project 2025 if he were to get elected. And the conservative principles that he would enact in many cases are likely congruent from a lot of the suggestions that are made in Project 2025. But you can quickly separate the people who are just there for the political carnival barking that don't spend much time actually reading the things like Project 2025. They actually really need you to not read Project 2025 in order for their argument to stick.
Well, that's very true. And I'd be willing to bet you that, for example, not a single one of the Hollywood celebrities who actually also come out and criticize Project 2025, I bet you not a single one has actually read a single word of the policy proposals.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. Hans, we appreciate you. Busy day as always. We always look forward to your expertise. Thanks for being with us. Oops, there he went. I leaned over and pushed the button a little bit too soon. Hans von Spakovsky, senior legal fellow for the Heritage Foundation, a former FEC commissioner and a DOJ lawyer. Check out his book. It's a good one to read right now while we are in campaign season, 40 days until the election begins. His book is How the Left Changed the Way You Vote. And oh, by the way, Illinois, you can go early vote today. We're going to have Jay Keevan on at 2:05, a rare 2 o'clock interview with my friend Jay Keevan. Jay Keevan, if you don't remember who he is, remember that one time where we went out and we got signatures at the very last minute because the Democrats in the state of Illinois were working very hard on trying to keep an opponent off of the ballot for Katie Stewart. Remember when Katie Stewart supported that bill to not have an opponent in her own election? Isn't that something? Isn't that something? Why would a state House representative, Katie Stewart, the Democrat who's been representing the Madison County area for maybe three terms now, I think three terms, why would she actively support a bill that says, no, we're going to not allow an opponent to be slated, as they have always done before, not allow opponent to be slated in her election? That's what she was in favor of. That sounds like a threat to democracy or something. I don't know if that's the right application of that. Keeping people from being able to run against you, it seems strange. Jay Keevan, super nice guy, law enforcement, decades in law enforcement. He's a public servant. He is not a politician. He is a genuine man, and he is going to come in and talk to us at 2 o'clock. And I'm looking forward to having him in here. And if you've got questions about the Illinois State Legislature, you can feed them to us on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. And also, no, today early voting starts, so get your tush over to the county seat or wherever you go to early vote and start casting your ballot and getting other people to go with you. The time is now. Let's take a quick break. Wiggins America next. Easy.
Wiggins.
Oh, Wiggins.
Okay, I'll admit I came up with this idea as something that was supposed to be kind of fun and funny and light, and then I started reading it and thought, this is actually really good advice. So I apologize that this took a turn into the real.
You can tell us what it is?
Things you need to give up after 40. Now, it doesn't mean right at 40 or in your 40. You can give it up if you're in your 50s or 60s, too.
What if you're 38?
If you're 38, you need to hang on to these things.
Okay. Not my problem.
once you hear them, you're going to go, no, you don't need to hang on to that. But it is stuff that they say once you get to 40 or above, it's stuff that you really should consider letting go of. The first one is letting go of the need for approval. Stepping into your 40s, you might start to feel tired of trying to make everyone else happy. The language is whatever, but time to start being your own biggest fan, and here's how. But the approval thing is one that, in my opinion, isn't even something that I've had to really try to let go of. Just the older you get, the less you care. Am I wrong?
You still care.
I'm not saying I don't care at all.
Here's the difference, though, because I don't disagree with you caring. I don't know enough about your life outside of here. You should care wholeheartedly about the people who matter, but there are so few people who matter.
Yes. Yes. And caring about them doesn't look like constantly needing their approval. You know, you
not caring. Just if you do something and those people are proud of you, that will make you feel prouder of yourself. If you do something and it disappoints those people, you're going to feel bad inside and you're going to want to rectify it. But the point that I'm making is there are so few people on the face of the planet, less than 20 probably, who should be able to have that big of an effect and an influence on your life.
I agree. I'm surprised you put that bar at 20, because it seems like it would be
even less than that. I was thinking like 5, but I thought most people would probably be a lot more than that.
I don't know. I just took a guy's trip with some very, very good old friends of mine that I've been friends with for a long time.
80, 90?
Yeah, they're old friends.
Yeah.
They were in their 50s when I was in high school, and got along.
They keep you young.
Yeah. So, it's all guys that are my age, and we've been living life, and they live in different parts of the country now. We get together about once a year for this thing. And as much as we used to kind of like, and I don't know if this is like a good thing or a bad thing, but as much as we used to joke constantly, like we would try to make each other laugh, there was this kind of competitive nature to making each other laugh. We got to the point now where we'll still do that a little bit, but we just don't care. And like there's a little bit of a loss there, but there's a comfort in just letting go of that. Next one. Breaking free from negative self-talk.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Do men do that?
This guy doesn't really do that. This guy has two thumbs and doesn't do that.
Some do.
This guy is awesome. The coolest guy I know.
To an extent, I'm sure everybody does this a little bit. It's not something that I've really struggled with.
Yeah, I some guys do. I don't really do it all that often, but, you know, it's... You call it like negative self-talk, you know, it's like that was stupid. I hear it a lot on the golf course with guys. I mean, that's
that
where
doesn't
it,
count.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That's
that
where it'll most,
fair
vocal,
enough.
No,
most yeah.
be vocally,
we're talking
but.
About like when you're sitting at your desk and you're doing work and you hate yourself for whatever particular reason, or you're, you know, getting ready in the morning and you're shaving or something like that.
Yeah.
Are you having negative thoughts about yourself?
You're doing up your faux hawk and you're like, ugh. This looks terrible. Why am I even trying this?
I hope so.
I mean, my faux hawk looks bad because it's basically just in the back now. this isn't something... I know that this is something that a lot of people work on regularly because it's their natural inclination to say negative things about either their environment or themselves to themselves that nobody else is hearing.
Have you ever seen Mean Girls?
Yeah, it's a good movie.
It's a great movie. It's a documentary, as I always refer to as my favorite documentary. But there's the part where these girls are all in Regina George's bedroom, and they're all standing in, they're the it girls of the high school, and they're all standing in front of the mirror, and they're all like taking turns looking in the mirror, talking crap on themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then they all turn and they look at Caddy, is that her name?
Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah, whatever. And they all look at her and she's like, I have really bad breath in the morning. But I mean, it's pressed into women that you are supposed to self-loathe. And there's a part where you realize that it's completely not productive and that nobody cares about the things that you care obsessively about. Nobody cares about them like you do. Or in most cases, doesn't even see the things that you don't like about yourself the way other people do. But it's a super hard habit to break. I think women would struggle with this one way more than men. But I think it's a good advice.
I would agree with that. I've heard pastors say before, just as life advice, you know, everybody's pretty selfish, and everybody's so selfish that you don't really have to worry about yourself so much.
Yes.
Because no, everybody else is thinking about just themselves.
Yes.
Like, yeah, that's pretty true. Number three, releasing the fear of change. Being brave when facing new things and building your strength by taking big changes one small step at a time, remembering the times you succeeded before, which is part of age, and how you've managed to adjust.
You like change?
I like it in increments. It's got to be, there has to be something new happening, but if it's too much at once, it gets overwhelming, but if there's none of it, it gets boring.
I hate endings.
Fair.
I, every time, forget that there's a beginning after an ending. I hate
that. That's kind of what this is speaking to.
Yeah.
Is be okay with change. Maybe look at the positive in the ending. You're thinking about your kids, aren't you? Whenever they hit a milestone.
No. I'm thinking about losing people in my life.
Mm. Like not...
Death.
Oh, you're thinking about death. Okay. Because
yeah.
What is the new beginning after death? That's one that I'm not sure what I would say to myself.
There's life after death. I mean, there's if you lose somebody who you love, the world keeps spinning, the sun keeps coming up, there are still people who are happy to see you and need you, and you have to keep going. And you can be joyful about that, even though you're still sad. But, like, the finite truth of basically everything is haunting to me. And I have to constantly try to either, A, not think about it at all, because I'll just get in a loop about it. But also understand that there's going to be something next. Like if you lose a loved one, for instance, my husband and I got married in September of 2007. He lost his grandma in July of 2007. And it was sad that it happened like that. It's like you wanted it to happen. You wanted to be able to experience that with everybody. There is sadness that exists there. But there are other things to celebrate afterwards, and you can miss the celebrations because you're too wrapped up in the thing that no matter how much you worry about it or hurt about it, it's still over. It's still done. So you have to kind of learn to accept it and be okay being sad about it and like understand and hold on to the sadness as a real, honest, legitimate feeling and say, I don't have to let go of completely being sad to also be able to be happy about the next thing. Because I think sometimes, you know, especially after the death of a close loved one, I think people feel bad for feeling good about something because of the mourning that they're in. And that transition is a difficult one to do, but it's important.
Weird diversion here, but you know who else struggled with the finiteness of everything and it was included in almost all of his works? Rod Serling, Twilight Zone. If you watch the original Twilight Zone, like all of his episodes have to do with something about aging or things ending. It was a common theme. Next one, quitting procrastination. I'm going to link that with a later one that says abandoning unrealistic expectations. Because to me, those two things are linked. If you're procrastinating, a lot of times the reason you are is because you don't think it's going to turn out well, or gosh, this is going to be a long journey. Let go of the expectations. And this is something I'm still learning right now. I'm always wanting to achieve something that's probably beyond what I'm able to, especially with like writing and some of the things that my life goals have been. And I'm having to just say, you know what, let's just let it be. I'm still going to write for fun. It may not become what I want it to be. Abandon the unrealistic expectations and get to work. Any thoughts? No, you turned on your mic to shake your head.
I was thinking about it, and it's like, no, you're, I mean, for me though, who has time to procrastinate?
Yeah, I mean, at this stage of life, you really don't.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm actually even sitting here thinking back to like this moment in time in my life, because there's so much going on at work right now, and then so much that I got going on at home that I don't, there's no such thing as procrastination. It's just, there's not enough time in the day to do what I need to do.
You procrastinate?
Always.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are you procrastinating, though? What is it that you're like, I'll do that later?
Whatever I don't want to do.
Anything.
I mean, like, I don't have extra time, but that doesn't mean I'm not putting things off. The idea that you can know that you have something that is kind of burning that hole and trying to remind you, hello, you need to do this, and you put it off and you put it off and you put it off, and then naturally it becomes a bigger problem that you should have just dealt with and prioritized over something else. I am a procrastinator. I don't like that about me. The things that matter in my life, like the things that usually what I procrastinate is stuff that has to do with just me. Like the consequences fall on me, not on other people. Because then nobody ever checks me on it.
You know what I don't do quickly is mundane paperwork. I tend to procrastinate that.
It's a perfect example.
It's just awful. It's like I know
I got a pile of paperwork somewhere, or like a phone call that you have to make to just clear something up.
Yes, and it's nothing ever that's super important. I would make a claim on some random.
It would take you 7 minutes to complete
whatever, and I'm just like. Ugh.
But it's like I might as well have to scale an unscalable wall.
Yes, there's always a pile of that stuff.
Yes,
letting go of grudges and
you're like,
past hurts.
I spilled stuff all over it.
Oh no, I can't do it anymore.
What was the last one?
Letting go of grudges and past hurts.
That's difficult.
This isn't really something that's specific to being 40, but I think it's a nod to becoming more mature.
At 40, it's about parents. I bet it's about familial situations.
Okay.
Because at 40, I mean, you're old enough that you're completely your own person, and your parents are now senior citizens. And there are things that are not worth holding on to at that point any longer. You gotta be able to move on from those things. You might have a divorce.
Yeah, you've got some life under your belt at that point that you're going to have hurts 100%. Last one, giving up the myth of perfection. Just letting go of, you know, it's weird because you get to this point where you go, I wanted my life to look like this. It never will. Nobody's vision of their life is ever going to become exactly what they want it to be. But you have to sort of accept that you are where you are.
Just to be realistic.
Yeah.
About everything. That's not always fun. But it is helpful. When we come back, Tyrus is going to join us. Dory Murdoch also moved him off of our diaper drive day yesterday, which was such a great success. Thank you to everybody who participated. So stick around. Go vote in the YouTube live chat poll. Which candidate would be a greater liability for the Democrats, Joe Biden or Kamala Harris? What do you think? I'm surprised it's as close as it is. We'll be right back.